So I call like a couple of my friends and I'm like, I'm not crying, but I'm crying when I'm talking about it. So I feel like that's like a kind of questionable 24 hours. Yeah. Like I'm strong on the phone, like, yeah, so, you know, I got kicked out of the party. And I'm like, but, you know, I don't know why this happened, but I'm okay.
I'm all right. I'm good.
So I called, I text my friend, the NBA player, but I called his wife. And me and her have such an amazing relationship. She's been, honestly, like, I owe them so much. But I called her and I told her what happened. And she had been joking around on Instagram, like every time I posted like a room, she's like, girl, you need to do our house. When we get our house, you need to do our house.
Oh, wow.
So she had been joking around and like adding him and stuff. And he'd be like, yeah, whatever. And then she called me. She was like, hey, okay, so I know this happened. She's like, we just bought a place. Would love for you to do it.
This is Claim of Stories, a show about leading and emerging BIPOC creatives and how they were able to claim their dream careers.
Tell me where you want to go, where you want to be. I can help you claim a seat, get you on your feet. Tell me where you want to go, where you want to be. I can help you claim a seat, yeah. Tell me where you want to go, where you want to be. I can help you claim a seat, get you on your feet.
I'm Bima, and on today's show, we talk to Tiffany Thompson, a.k.a. The Plant Mommy, an interior designer based in Portland, Oregon, who's always known her worth and backed it up. An ambitious New Yorker adopted by her aunt, she was able to see the world and knew she was going to make herself known. Tiffany set her sights on working in the sports industry. While attending Barry University in Miami, she studied sports management. She would leverage this to work with NBA vets like Alonzo Mourning, the University of Miami, and even landed a job at Nike. Although Tiffany worked at Nike for nearly 10 years, her dreams of remaining in corporate America started to change after purchasing her first home. She became obsessed with interior design and would ultimately decide to leave her full-time job to chase her dreams. As a kid, Tiffany recalls not really understanding the concept of having a home. This is largely due to the absence of her biological parents. While Tiffany was just a baby, her mother was struggling with drug addiction and her father was in jail. In our conversation ahead, Tiffany shares a story about her grandmother's home catching on fire due to a fight between her mother and a drug dealer in New York.
So when I was five, my mom, my birth mom, she has a drug addiction. She still does. She actually also has HIV as well. And, you know, her drug addiction is a disease, essentially. So she just was unable to care for me in the way that she really needed to. And then my dad, at the same time, was sent off to jail for, I think, attempted murder or something crazy, right? My dad's a gangster.
Both of your parents. you're five.
Yeah, I'm about four at this point. So my grandma starts taking care of me, you know, and as, thankfully, like Black communities do and family communities do, they just kind of all band together to be like, we're going to be the caregiver for this child because, you know, she's family.
Yeah, I mean, raised by a village.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And at some point, it became too much. So at some point, the story that I've heard was, you know, there was a drug dealer that was essentially trying to get after my mom and ended up throwing a brick through my grandma's house and set the house on fire. And then everybody kind of had to come to a decision of like, okay, well, what are we doing?
Because that's not acceptable,
yeah,
right? Like you didn't, I mean, now your grandmother's house is in danger.
Exactly. So my grandma and my grandpa made the decision to move down to Dallas, as well as my two aunts.
Wow.
And then I was kind of left like, okay, well, do we take this young child with us and raise this young child? Or do we put this child in foster care? Because, you know, like my dad's grandparents and stuff were around, but they weren't, that wasn't a conversation that was had with them. This was like, you're your mother's child.
Yeah.
It's our duty to figure out what we're going to do. So my aunt ended up taking me in. She had two kids at the time, which is my mom. I love her to death. Shout out to Miss Debbie Bond. But she took me in and, you know, she raised me like her daughter.
Yeah.
And I knew that, like, what was kind of going on, but I didn't necessarily know how to cope with it. I just knew, like, this is my aunt and my cousin. Mm-hmm. And at some point, they just became my mom and my sister.
Yeah. You're like, this is my family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think all that to say is, like, was definitely a time, I would say, like, maybe my 14, 15, where my parents just kind of came back into the picture.
Mm.
And it was, like, a very confusing, like, okay, well,
yeah.
Now I have all these questions. I kind of just threw it to the side when I was younger, like,
right, because you just assumed that they were gone.
Yeah, I thought my dad, honestly, like, so my dad would call from jail every Saturday or Sunday, whatever it was, but my mom would answer the phone and screen the call, and then I would talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to tell kids my dad was in Staten Island. Like, that's how crazy New York is in terms of, like, boroughs. You know, it's like, oh, I'm dating a girl in the Bronx. We basically in a long-distance relationship. Yeah. I used to be like, my dad's in Staten Island. He's in school in Staten Island. But he calls me every Sunday. I didn't know that he was in the situation he was in. Mm-hmm. And my mom just wasn't even a factor because of her drug addiction.
Right.
But, you know, what's really amazing about that experience as I look back at it as an adult is it gave me the ability to figure out who I am, mm-hmm. right? It put this chip on my shoulder that on paper, I was a child of New York. I was a foster child, excuse me. But really just trying to, like, break the mold. It was so easy to fall into the stereotype and be like, okay, well, these are the excuses that I have to not be whatever God put me on this earth to be. But I was like, no, that's not going to happen. What I'm going to do, I was the kid that's like, you know, like Fresh Prince when he, like, meets his father, like, I'm going to prove him wrong. I'm going to be the best damn dad. He goes like, I was like, I'm going to be the coolest kid ever. And I'm going to be so successful that my parents are going to be like, I wish. You know what I'm saying? And I'm also going to give a nod to my mom for taking me in and be like, you made a good decision. Yeah. And I always joke around with her about my brother and my sister. I'll be like, you know, she'd be like, if I didn't have them, she was a dancer, a professional dancer. It's like, if I didn't have them, I'd probably be dancing, you know, with Prince and all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, but you chose me.
Yeah.
So we could have been out there
dancing with Prince.
You didn't have to have them, but I was a choice, you know? So again, I just think that she had a really great vision for us and she was able to sacrifice and, you know, I owe everything to her. But then also, like, as I've started to build a relationship with my birth mom in the last 2 years, I also, like, she had vision as well to know, like, hey, I'm not able to, whether or not it was purposeful or not, but you start to kind of look at it, the situation differently and start to kind of feel bad. Like, what would it be like to give up your kid, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a, I think as we get older, right, I think when you're looking at your parents from the age of, you know, very young age before you've experienced the world, we typically think of them as, like, perfect people and, like, superheroes. And so as we get older with more perspective, we're like, ah, this was way more of a difficult thing than you just giving me up. Like, there was a lot more stuff happening in the background.
Yeah. And I'm like, you had the foresight and the vision to know that you couldn't finish what you started, but somebody else could. And it's like, that takes courage as well.
Yeah.
And so I'm, you know, I'm super grateful for her as well, because I'm like, well, who knows what would have happened if I would have, she would have just been selfish and said, you know, I'm going to take on this child, even though I know I can't, you know, physically and mentally and emotionally do that.
Right. Totally. And so you ended up going to the other side of Queens and you're living with your aunt who is your mom as well. And how's that going? How's living with her and that family? Like, what's happening?
Oh my gosh. I was a pain in the ass. I was such a, like, people see me now, they're like, oh, you're so, I was such a moody child. Like, I didn't know the emotions. I just didn't want to be bothered. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be like, ugh, just everything was annoying.
Yeah,
everything was, stressed me out. Mm-hmm. Everything was just too much.
It was an inconvenience.
Yeah, but I was also, like, on the other side, I was very, like, funny.
Yeah.
Like, I would make a joke out of everything. I could be, like, I'm very much, I say this, like, an introverted extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
When I don't want to be bothered, and that's true to this day, I'm good. I can self-care for 3 months. But when I do, like, want to be interacting with people, I'm like, all right, I turn it on, you know, and it's like, it's going to be a good time. So I think that's what she kind of dealt with, was the emotions of, like, she calls it my Libra scale, you know, but she's like, you can be really fun, but when you're present and when you're not present, you know, it's a little bit more difficult. But I think, again, it's just me trying to deal with some of those emotions and figuring things out. And again, it's like, well, all these other kids have parents and they look like them, or, you know, there's so many unanswered questions that I'll probably die never knowing, which is, I've come to grips with, like, it's just the reality. Just, because there's new memories and questions that I'm going to be able to make.
Right.
But it was really just interesting. I remember just really quickly, there used to be this show, and this is dating back my age, but there used to be this show, like, it was a Ricky Lake show.
Mm-hmm.
So she was a host and she would have, like, people reuniting with their moms or dads after, like, 30 years.
Yeah, I remember this.
And I used to watch that show, like, I'm going to go on that show,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to meet my mom and dad. Like, I just had a vision for, like, how I was going to reunite with them and what that experience was going to be like. And it definitely was not that. I remember seeing, like, my mom for the first time and looking at her like, wow, you look just like me. You look just like, you know, my aunt and her sisters. But I, like, did not say, I didn't say a word. Mm-hmm. I just was so like, it just was too much, you know? It was too much. But again, it's like looking back on it now, having the understanding and the empathy that I have now, you know, like I said, I'm so grateful. And I think it's going to, one day when I decide to have kids, it's going to make me an even, you know, better mom. Like, yeah. I have a dog now that I'm obsessed with. I'm like, who can give away a dog? Yeah. I'm like, a kid? How could you do this? But yeah, it just all circles back to, again, getting me to my passion.
Right.
And what that really means to me.
Totally, totally. So as a young teenager growing up in New York, right? You're growing up in New York, like late 90s. What are you like? What are you interested in? What are you doing?
Oh, I'm into sports. I was basketball all the way. I was a diehard Knicks fan. God bless the Knicks.
Yeah, y'all have having some challenging times.
We are always going to have challenging times with the current ownership. But yeah, it was cool. Like this level of independence that I had. Like I remember taking the train. Me, my brother, and my sister would take the train to my grandma's house. And I must have been like five or six or something. Like I was so young, or taking the train to see my mom. She worked for the subway system when we were seven. So I was like this level of independence that we just had to figure stuff out. Mm-hmm. And my mom worked so many jobs that my sister and I were like, we just gonna do this together.
Figure it out. Yeah, you had independence at a young age.
Yeah. So as a teenager, it was like that times 10. It was like you didn't answer to anybody. Mm-hmm. You just kind of did whatever. I mean, I'm so lucky that I made smart choices and I wasn't hanging out with the wrong, you know, friends. Because again, I had that vision of like what I'm trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. But New York was great. It was vibrant. I remember, man, so like 1996 or 95. Mm-hmm. We used to go to Brooklyn a lot. We used to go to Coney Island.
Okay.
Like, and it's, Brooklyn was way different than Brooklyn now, right? Yeah. We see like our cousins and stuff. And I remember being in Coney Island and like they debuted a Junior Mafia Biggie song, Get Money.
Get Money, yeah.
And they played that on Hot 97. And we were literally on a ride when they played it. And everybody in Brooklyn, they played it like 20 times.
Jeez.
And I just remember like that type of energy of being like, this is, you know, this is in our backyard. Yeah. Like, this is crazy. Like the Jay-Z Nas situation. I remember having to choose and being like, well, I'm from Queens, but I really love Jay-Z. It was like a whole thing. Like we just had that energy that New York was at the top of everything, music and sports. And even though aside from the Knicks, but just the players that were coming out of New York, Stephon Marbury, you know, it's like we had this type of energy that it was really, really cool to go through it. And again, I just thought that was normal. Like I just thought, oh, you don't have a block party on a random Sunday because, you know, they won a Source Award? Like, you don't have that?
You don't have that?
Yeah.
So you have such this massive vision of the world through New York. When did you start to learn more about how the other people were experiencing the world?
Through travel.
Mm.
So again, my mom being the visionary that she was, and one of the two jobs that she worked for British Airways.
Okay.
And British Airways was at the time like the pristine, like, you know, airline, and they had the Concorde and you could travel to London in less than 3 hours. And it was crazy. It was a big deal. So my mom got that job. She's always lived in New York her entire life. She didn't go to college. So she's never left the city, and she will never leave the city. She's a New Yorker.
Like,
she's a bodega girl.
She's good.
Yeah, she's never leaving. But what she did is she allowed us through that job to travel. Mm. So like at a really young age, we were going to countries that I couldn't even pronounce or, you know, locate on the map.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine like a girl in Queens that grew up in the hood.
Yeah.
But then you're coming back from a trip to Portugal. And you're like telling your friends like, yeah, so we went to Portugal and Brussels.
They're like, what are you talking about? Like, is she making this up?
And then we're going back to the projects. You know, it's like, it was just so crazy. But that was my first viewpoint of like, yes, I know this culture and this world that I see every day through like my friends and their experiences and their cultural differences. But seeing it was completely different. And till this day, like travel to me is an experience that everybody has to have, because it just opens your eyes, and it's just like visually just seeing things that are different. Also, again, coming into myself and figure out who I am and what I like.
Yeah.
I knew that very quickly through my travels. I was like, New York is not the place for me. Mm. I love New York and I need to be here, but once I can get out, I'm going out.
I'm going out.
So like I was taking like French classes. Like I was like, I'm gonna move to Paris. Then I would like figured out there's a lot of pigeons in Paris. I'm scared of birds. So I was like, okay, Paris is not it.
I love the rationale. You're like, they got pigeons.
I ain't going. Yeah, I was like, Paris ain't it. I'll eat her croissant down a block. But yeah, it just was really cool to just see other cultures and how also the similarities, right? Mm-hmm. So like family's the same. Like, everybody has a grandmother, regardless of what you look like, regardless of where you come from. Traditions are a little bit different, but there's mm-hmm. still traditions.
Yep.
What's their norm and poverty is still the same in these other countries and adversities and all this stuff. So it was really cool to see that and witness that. And again, it's like really blowing your mind of like, oh, there's more.
Yeah.
And there's even more that I still haven't discovered. Still. But it's like, it just clicked that level of curiosity for me to always be like, okay, what else is there? And this is the time before like internet was just starting to pop, you know, when I was like a teenager or whatever it was.
Had that DSL, wherever the connection was.
AOL, get off the phone because I'm trying to be on, you know, my little chat, my ASL thing. But that was just, again, it was like I got to physically see mm-hmm. it and experience it and try new things. Yeah. And that is the, you know, the underlining of like how I design and just who I am as a person.
Wow. And so as you're, you know, getting into your late teens and you're thinking about, you know, you were joking about, you know, Paris, when it was time to go to school, was it like definite that you were going to school and did you know where you were going to go?
Yeah, that experience was interesting. So a check of reality was a New York public school, right? Mm-hmm. And the lack of guidance, literally guidance and education from some of the leaders there. So mm-hmm. I remember having a guidance counselor that, you know, I was like, oh, I'm going to go to college.
Yeah.
Just randomly, I think it was like a junior or something. And I was like, I'm going to go to college. Nobody in my family's ever gone to college, but I'm going to figure this out. And I had a very detailed conversation with her. And leaving that conversation, she said, she's like, you're not going to school. She's like, don't even apply for anything. There are like, you're not going to actually get into college. She's like, just go get a job and basically just continue down the cycle of what, you know, you've seen in the past.
Why would she say that?
I don't know why. I think what I do, again, I'm giving grace, but I think sometimes like people can't see what you can see, right? Mm-hmm. Like my dreams are my dreams that God gave for me. And so I can't expect other people to have the same visions as me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just more so of like her limiting vision just spewed onto the kids, you know, and what she gave us. And she said that to a couple of kids, which finding that out from other successful people that went to high school with me that were, you know, we're friends now. But yeah, I didn't know it was going to happen. And so what ended up transpiring is I had a really bad injury, a wrist injury, mm-hmm. when I was like 13 or 14.
Yeah.
And going into high school, I was all about basketball. I was I'm going to be a basketball player or something. I'm going to mm-hmm. get somewhere in this world. And then that hand injury completely changed. Like, I couldn't play basketball.
Wow.
So I played like as a freshman, but I was horrible. And it was like, dang, this dream. Yeah, what am I going to do? This is the thing that I thought that I was going to like lean on and get me out of my situation this, you know, person that my parents could, you know, be upset that they gave up.
Mm-hmm.
So this girl that played basketball, she's like, hey, you're pretty athletic. You should play soccer.
Hmm.
And I'm like, all right, whatever. You know, it's in the other season. It was in the spring season versus the fall season. Mm-hmm. Went out for the soccer team, immediately, you know, got on the varsity team and was a starter. I wasn't good, but it just more so was like, okay, this gets my like athletic thing I need to get out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended up, so after I had that conversation with her, my senior year, it was like a senior showcase and I was like all Queens or it's like all Queens, all city soccer player.
Okay.
Which I'm pretty proud of myself for playing for only 3 years.
It's a big deal.
You know, you're
probably pretty athletic.
You could not tell me that wasn't an MVP, NBA trophy. I was so excited about it. Yeah. But I played in this showcase and it was for New York and there was a couple of colleges there. So Queens College had reached out to me, mm-hmm. which is a local, I think they're D1. Okay. So they reached out and was like, hey, we'll give you a scholarship. And then also was like this random school upstate. And again, I was so focused on like getting out of New York.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, I'll just go to the school upstate. Crazy. It was like going to DeVry. It was like playing soccer at DeVry. It was like a one building school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was like, yeah, I can't do this.
You're like, this is not what my vision was for getting out.
Yeah. So it was like, I basically went there, got my grades up to where I needed to go. And then I ended up going to school in Miami.
Yeah.
So that was like, Miami was, okay, where can I be that's warm, that makes me feel like I'm not in America, you know, without going overseas. And it was like, I've heard amazing things about Miami. And they always say it's like a completely different part you know, of Florida and America. And so I ended up going to school down there. So it all ended up working out. Again, I think nothing happened that wasn't supposed to happen in my life, but it was a scary time because I didn't know. It was like, you're at the end of this rope and it's like, well, what are you going to do? And it just, everything just, you know, figured itself out, which is great.
Totally. So it's 2004 and you're heading to Barry in Miami for college, right? So what was it about Barry? Because you were coming from Syracuse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now you're heading down to Miami.
Yeah.
But why Barry College?
Okay, so hopefully Julian's not listening, but I had actually chose Miami because I was dating a guy and he was from Miami and his family literally lived across the street from the university. And like, he'll never know that, he'll probably know now, but I was looking for one. I was looking for schools that had like really great sports management programs because I knew I wanted to be in and around sports. I didn't know what it was that I wanted to do at that moment.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll figure it out when I'm there. I want to be in Miami because, you know, I got a little boo thing here. And I wanted to be in a warm place that was cultural. And so it was like Barry, or I think it was maybe FIU, because even the University of Miami didn't have a really good sports management program. Okay. Yeah. But Barry was like number one in Florida or something like that. Yeah.
Wow. And so you find out about this and you're like, I'm going to do sports management.
Yeah. I was like, I just need to do the thing that doesn't make... I had always heard those quotes about do the thing that doesn't feel like work. And I was like, sports. Like, I knew at that point I wasn't going to be a professional anything.
Okay.
And as an athlete, it was like, oh, I'll still play soccer and stuff.
Soccer here and there, yeah.
But it wasn't going to be like my thing. Plus, soccer players don't make money like that.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't back in the day. I don't know what they make now, but they wasn't they wasn't balling like Kevin Durant's balling,
yeah,
you know?
It wasn't those nine-figure deals that we're seeing.
Exactly. So, yeah, it just was like, I just want to do the thing that allows me to wear sweats to work. I could be really passionate about it. And then it just took me 4 years to figure out, like, well, what where in sports do I want to be?
What did you, like, in that program or even before, what did you think you would do with that major or with that, you know, graduating from that?
Yeah, so I had high visions. I was going to be the first female GM of an NBA team, period. You know, I was like, I've never seen one. I've never seen a black one.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a woman. And that's what I'm going to do. And at the time, I had transitioned to like being a Sacramento Kings fan. So I was like, I mean, it could be for the Miami Heat, but it'll likely be maybe the Kings or
the Kings.
Maybe the Knicks. You know, they're not that good. So their expectations might be a little lower for me. But that was my goal. I was like, I just always had high goals. I never, there was, even though I didn't see it, there was never a thought in my mind of like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
It was just like, I'm just going to be the first. And I know the first sucks, but I'll be the first to do it. And I'll open the door for everybody else.
Wow. Well, I love the vision.
It didn't happen.
So what happened as you started to get into the major? What were you learning about the possibilities, or what were people telling you were possibilities?
So I had a really great teacher that I still keep in touch with to this day. Dr. Rosenberg, he's like the coolest, like opposite of cool teacher. Like he's such a teacher, right? Yeah. And he's like super kind of dorky. But like has a boat in Miami and knows everybody. Like he used to bowl with Lil Wayne.
He used to bowl.
He was on a bowling league at Lucky Strike, and Lil Wayne was his teammate amongst Alonzo Mourning. It was like these stories he would tell, and I was like, this is the coolest guy.
Yeah.
So through him, we just started talking about, okay, like what do you want to do? So he had me like, you can be in Parks and Rec, you know, and you know, work for the city of Miami and do this stuff. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm not into that.
I said, I'm trying to be a GM.
Yeah, I'm trying to be a GM. So it was like, okay, well, you can work for the Heat, or there was a soccer team at the moment in Miami. So I did an internship there. And what I realized that early on was like, well, if you work for the team, you can't watch the games.
Yeah, it's funny. We have a friend that was working at the Trailblazers, and I realized, I was like, oh, you're working.
Yeah, you're running around the arena, doing all this stuff. Like, you don't actually get to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like I said, love the NBA. I think the NBA is amazing, and I love those games. And I was like, yeah, I can't do it. This, I don't even think I want to be the GM of this team if this is what it takes. So quickly was like, no, I'm not doing that. Then I worked for Alonzo Mourning and his charities because I was like, oh, well, maybe I could work with NBA players. So we did like, he used to do this thing, like an annual charity event that like D-Wade and Shaq and LeBron, all these guys would come out and be a huge party for the weekend in Miami. That was cool, but I was like, I don't feel like this is really serving me. And then at some point, I was like, maybe I'll work for college. Like, and the school down there was the University of Miami. And, you know, that was the big dog.
And what were you, so University of Miami, yeah, that's a massive brand and university. What were you, from a career perspective, what were you thinking? What, like, you work for, like, one of the teams? Or?
Yeah, I was like, I'll work for the basketball, the football team, right? The football was definitely the first choice because I'm like, love,
the U.
Like,
come
the
on.
U. Come on. That's what everybody knows. You have the glamour to it, the bad boy nature. They were not good at that point. Shout out to Randy Shannon, you know, but we tried.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, either be that or the basketball team. And the basketball team was just like, they were in the ACC, but they just weren't like Dukes in ACC, North Carolina, you know, like Georgia Tech. It's like, they were not even a conversation from a basketball standpoint. So, but I was like, yeah, that could be really cool. And then maybe when I finish my degree, I can start doing my master's down here for free. I'm always trying to finesse. That's the New York.
Yeah, you were trying to figure out what's the next move. You're playing chess.
Always. And what happened is I just, serendipitous, I applied online, put my resume in, get a call the next day from the head coach from a New York number. So I was like, who is this?
Who is this?
And he's like, oh, this is Frank Have. And we just got into a conversation and figured out we both were from a very specific part of New York. We had family. We knew kind of similar people. He was
chances?
A black coach. And he's like, just come down. Like, come down tomorrow and we'll figure it out. And he found a job for me, essentially.
Wow.
So,
and so this is why you're still in undergrad.
Yeah, this is while I'm still at Barry. So that I remember calling Dr. Rosenberg, like, so I have a job now. Like, I know we're doing these internships, but I have a job. But he's like, no, you still need to do your internships because, you know, you have a certain requirement to fulfill. And so I ended up doing an internship with this sports agency that represented soccer and tennis players while I was also working at the U full time. So I had to, like, take night classes and kind of switch things up. But it was really cool. There also was, I know you didn't ask this question, but there actually was, when you think about fate and just, again, faith and having faith in the process, there was a point where I couldn't pay. Like, I had like a $3,500 bill.
Yeah, I remember that there was a conversation we were having prior about that. And so you were towards the end of college, right? Like, you were like finishing up your last credits. And I think it was that you weren't going to be able to graduate or get your diploma if you didn't pay this last amount.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not shouting them out, but the financial department don't play at these universities. Like, if you need somebody to find somebody,
that's who you go to.
That's who you go to. They will figure it out. They don't play about these notices, and they will not let you. Like, they have no empathy for these students. And especially what was really kind of devastating too, coming into that, like, I had chose this university based on the program, but because of me being quote unquote adopted, I technically was supposed to go to school for free. I was an independent student.
Wow.
But because I chose a private school instead of going to a public school, I had to pay out of pocket. So these are things that, of course, you don't think about when you're going. You're just trying to figure out what's the best chances for me to pursue my dreams. But that actually, so then I had this credit. I had like $3,500. You got to pay this. Otherwise, you can't take this one class that will get you to graduate. It's a spring class, or you have to wait till the next year.
Wow.
So I remember being like, calling my mom, and my mom's like, she's like, I don't have it. And she's like, I can't even co-sign for you because I co-signed for your brother for college. And I'm kind of like, I ain't messing with this college thing no more.
Yeah.
You're going to have to figure it out.
Wow.
So I prayed about it. My grandfather had passed away maybe like 2 weeks or something prior to that. And I just remember one day I was like, okay, well, I just can't finish college then. And I was like, I'll just have to come back next year. And I also knew my personality. I was like, I'm probably not going to come back. So I was like, you know, you tried.
Yeah.
You know, you've been going, and you know, you went against the grain, and you've been fighting for this, and it's not going to work out.
It's not going to work out.
And I got a call from Dr. Rosenberg. He was like, hey. And I was like, what's up? He's like, he comes down to the office. I come to the office. He was like, I submitted your name for a grant without telling you, and you got approved for it. And it literally was like, it was like maybe I had $3,495, and it was like a $3,500.
Are you kidding me?
And now I still don't know to this day if he just paid that for me or if that was really a grant. I don't know what it was, but I remember thinking, me like, this is my grandfather maybe being like, no, I need you to finish because God has, you know, you here for a purpose, and I need you to just stick with the plan and we'll make it happen. And so it was like, cool. I took the class and then I graduated, and then I continued to work down at the U.
That is, I mean, talk about incredible in timing and just also just like, what?
Yeah.
Like, shows up right on time when you need it, and you can continue to go on your path.
Always. And so it's so easy, and you know, we'll talk about this a little later on, but it's so easy to be like, woe is me, right? Mm-hmm. And we were watching a video in the car, like I always watch my Diddy videos to get me all hyped up. But it's like, it's so easy to live in the darkness and just be so complacent with whatever, you know, life throws at you, mm-hmm. that just having that little bit of faith is like the faith of the size of a mustard seed, wow. right? Like Julian, my boyfriend, says, just having that little bit is like, it has proven me right this entire time. And it's, you know, it's worked out for me. So I always at least try to figure out like how I can just muster that up to be like, it's going to work out. I don't know why. I don't know how, but it'll work itself out because it always has.
It always has. I think that's an incredible mindset to have, because I think the laws of attraction, right? If you think and believe positive things, those tend to be the things that come into your life. And you seem like the type of person that manifest that in real time and throughout. I want to go into a little bit around, like, I think it's like 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you had been working at University of Miami, and you've gained that experience. You've met a ton of people through that experience. And at some point, you received a call from Nike about an opportunity in Chicago. How did this happen? I'm sure it just didn't happen at random.
It did not. Well, it felt like it happened to them, but just to go back, so another one of these little boys I was talking to. So I was working for the university for the basketball team, and I was dating one of the basketball players, of course, and we got called into like compliance, right? Because it was like a secret, you're not allowed to date the basketball players, and I got called into compliance, and they're like, we were basically the same age, it's just because, you know, I was working while the person was in college.
Yeah.
And like, you can't date the basketball player. Like, you'll get fired. And I think that was the moment I was like, yeah, I can't work for college basketball because I'm still young and
I don't need all these rules.
Yeah, I don't know what's about to happen in my life, but y'all not about to tell me what I can and cannot do. So I just was like over it. Mm-hmm. And the next week, again, another moment, this guy walks in, he's decked out his Nike like tracksuit, black guy. And I'm like, I'm at the desk, whatever, helping the coach. And he was like, yeah, I need to meet with da-da-da. And I was like, yeah, who are you? He's like, oh, my name is Antonio. He's like, I work for Nike. Mm-hmm. And completely like...
You were like, wait a minute.
You hear that? I was like, what do you mean? Wait, you work for Nike in like Japan? Like, where do you work?
Where you work?
He was like, in Portland. So I'm like typing like, okay, Portland, Oregon. I don't know where the hell that is.
I've never heard of that.
I don't know if it's in America. I don't know anything. I really don't know. But that was like... Wow, I didn't even know people worked for this company. Mm-hmm. I just, again, my interaction with Nike has been this sneaker and these shoes that have, you know, shaped my life shows up at my local sneaker shop. And, you know, and I go to Jamaica Ave and I buy my shoes and, you know, it is what it is. But I didn't know that there was a whole like brains and actual physical people that were behind it. Again, I didn't know what I didn't know because I'd never seen it.
Never saw it. Yep.
And so he was my first time like, okay, I'm now starting to think differently about this, because even in my sports management, you know, classes in my degree, they didn't tell me that you could work for these
brands. They told
you
Parks and Recs.
Yeah, they were very literal around, this is sports and this is what you can do in sports. Not, you can be in and around sports. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be a business owner and represent an athlete outside of an agency. You can work for Nike, work for Adidas, work for New Balance. Like, I just didn't know that stuff existed. Or you can even work for Beats by Dre and be in the sports division.
Right.
So that was like game on for me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, you got to figure this out. Yeah. Now, I applied for every job, Nike and Adidas at the time, because I just was like,
I'm
trying to get the best of the best, which Nike was that to me. But I was like, but I'll settle for Adidas if I have to, just to get to Nike. You know, it was like, I'm like, I need to work for the best of the best. So I applied. I ended up talking to the head coach. They were at Nike school, of course. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm going to help you. Just stay another year. Mm. I stayed the next year, and then he didn't help me, so I quit.
Wait, why? What happened? Why wasn't he trying to help you?
I think you will realize this, and I think all entrepreneurs will realize this, but you know, you have like, you get a really good player. It's like, imagine like basketball. Mm-hmm. You get your LeBron, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, I got LeBron. Like, oh, we finna go. I'm about to make plans for all these championships we about to get. We just gonna build around LeBron. And then LeBron says, I want to leave. Mm. I think as a boss and as like a business owner and as the coach specifically in this situation, it just was more so like, well, I don't want my best player leaving. Mm-hmm. And maybe I thought I was mentally prepared for this and I'd be able to help them. But then it started to come into this like, well, actually, I don't want to help them because I want them to stay.
Yeah.
So I'm actually trying to like, sometimes people limit your opportunities because they see the value in you.
Wow.
And I think we don't realize that. We just kind of look at it as like, oh, you're holding me back or you're hating. It's right. Like, no, they know your worth. They just don't know how to express it and be able to let that go. And I think a really good coach knows that sometimes some of those players have to go to another team to become the best version of themselves, right? Like, there's players like a Jordan that just need to stay on that team and they're going to be, you know, great. But there's also the LeBrons that, like, I need to move around my growth and make sure that I could, you know, become who I'm supposed to become. So that was, you know, that was really challenging. But I quit and then I moved back to New York. That was tough to move back to New York. Solo myself. I was back home with my mom.
Because you're a very progressive person.
Yeah.
That probably felt like a step back.
Yeah, but I had a plan. I was like, all right, if we're going to be here, what are we going to do?
What are we going
to
do?
So I ended up working for, I reached out on LinkedIn. So anybody listening that is like trying to get a job, LinkedIn is still the thing that can potentially change your life and your career. It's like you have all these people at your fingertips. Don't be afraid to reach out to them. Send messages, you know, figure out who's doing the jobs you want. Like that also gave me a scope into Nike. I was like, well, I didn't know this job existed. And what does this person do? And it just started to like read the description. So when I was applying for jobs, I'd be like, okay, well, this person has it. This is their experience. Do I even qualify for this? And I didn't really care at the time. I was applying for president. Yeah. I don't care. I was like, I could be the president of Nike. So I just was applying and I met this guy on LinkedIn who's one of my mentors now. His name is Dame and he was running an agency that was working with Nike and they did World Basketball Festival in Harlem.
Wow.
Yeah. So that summer when I moved back and I had a job already.
Okay.
So I was a brand ambassador for Nike and I was making more than like, you know, the Eakins or whatever at the time. You know, we was balling and we was in this space. It was a very specific basketball space and it was about the history of basketball.
Okay.
It was called the Ballroom. And it was like, you know, the start of basketball in like the 70s and where it's evolved to in technology and all the jerseys and shoes. And it was the space where if you were a Nike executive, if you were a basketball player, Kobe and Bron and all these guys would come in. It was the first time they were putting together the new dream team.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was like, you know, they had been losing for so long.
Yeah. So this is more like that journey of like, no, when we get ready for the next Olympics, we're like rebranding the team. Yeah.
And they were going against like Yao Ming and all these guys. So it was like, we need to come full force and Nike put everything behind it. Jay-Z performed at like Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah.
They built a basketball court and then they played. So that was a really cool experience because it gave me like, I'm this close to Nike. But I also was like, I'm going to be the best storyteller here.
Yeah.
So while I'm applying and trying to get these jobs, the people that, you know, need to see me will see me and maybe they'll vouch for me. I just wanted to make sure I worked every angle.
You were thinking about what are all of the levels of influence that I need to have to make this vision come true.
Exactly. It's like, you should always think about what people say about you for sure, but think about what you want them to say about you. And then that gap in between, those are the things, if they don't align, those are the things you need to work on. So I always made sure that like I worked on those things, but then also the story that people said when they talked about Tiffany Thompson aligned to what I needed them to say to get, you know, my end goal.
Right.
And I ended up getting hired for Nike like middle of the summer. Not for that, but I think it all played into each other because I put that on my resume, like, oh, I'm working at the Ballroom. I was shouting out names like, yeah, I met this person and this person.
Yeah.
Had an interview, a Skype interview at that, which was crazy.
And this was for, which role at Nike was this one for?
This was for a project coordinator in Chicago.
Okay. And so, Skype interviews a thing then?
No. So, another, like, this is so crazy to talk about this stuff and to be like, girl, you're crazy. Like, but I'm also like, I don't have nothing to lose. Like, I'm 20 something now. If you have like now in my age, I might have a little bit of different energy of how I approach stuff, but I still have that same like, we're gonna try it.
And we're gonna see where
it goes. And we're gonna see what happens. And if it don't work out, we're gonna try it again.
Yeah.
You know? So I apply for the job. They tell me what it is. I'm like, can you send the description? Cause I don't remember what I applied for. She was like, okay, we can send you the job description. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, yeah, we need you to fly in because we're at the end of the fiscal year. Mm-hmm. So this was like around May. Nike's fiscal ends at the end of May. And they're like, we don't have the budget. And that happens quite often. Yeah. Like being in the inside was like, we don't have budget. So we need to shut travel down. Mm-hmm. So they're like, yeah, we can't fly you in. So you fly yourself. And especially at this job position. And I remember talking to that girl and I was like, no. I was like, no. And she's like, well, what? You know,
like, yeah, yeah.
What? And I was like, yeah, no. I was like, I'm not, one, I'm broke. So I was like, I actually can't even afford, I can't.
But I'm not.
But I'm not going to, because I just know the caliber of my worth. Mm. I know what Nike's worth. Mm-hmm. And I know that if you guys called me after all this time, that means you want me. Some inkling in you means that I qualify and you think I'm worth this position. And so I'm going to bet on myself, and I'm not flying there unless you guys pay for it.
Tiffany, so in making that decision, were you also ready to think about other opportunities?
I was just like, it'll happen when it happens then. It's just not my time. But I told my mom was pissed. You know, I'm laying up on the couch and she's like, no, you need to go. Yeah. Like, you need to figure. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. She was like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know yourself. You know what I'm saying? You've always been like this. Like, mm-hmm. I said, if I want to do something, I do it. If I don't want to do it, Tiffany's just being a little moody.
Tiffany's just being Tiffany.
And the lady was like, all right, well, I'll call you if there's any other opportunities that come up. She's like, you know, you've been applying to so many jobs. It just, she's like, it just, it's kind of striking that you don't want to. And I was like, yeah, I can't. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
And I told her exactly why. So she calls me back the next day. She was like, okay, well, she's like, we never do this. Again, this is like 2010. So Skype, you know, everything is just super weird. And technology is kind of like not really booming, but it's in this interesting phase. And she was like, well, we can have you do a Skype interview, but you'll come down to the Trump Tower.
Oh, wow.
So that's a part of my story, which is crazy. You go to the Trump Tower and we'll like video, they had to like video con with a certain computer system because it wasn't an actual Skype. It was like whatever. So I go down there, I Skype interview. I'm interviewing with the guy who's the GM of the entire Chicago and the entire Central, all the way down to Dallas. He's in charge of everything. And we're talking and he used to live in New York. And
wow.
Then I mentioned this guy, like when I was in Miami, one of the things I had done, I was always doing these random events. I had worked on a Nike Broward versus Dade football game. So like if you're anybody from Florida knows, like Florida boys and football is a thing. And there's like this, like imagine it's not the same, but like Washington County versus, you know, like Multnomah. But it's like a big deal because there's so many famous football players that have come from
out of these, these programs.
Yeah. So Broward was like Fort Lauderdale and up. And then Dade County was Miami, you know? Yeah. So I worked that. There was this guy, Scott Dixon or Henson. I can't remember his exact name, but he ran that for Nike.
Mm.
And he lived in Dallas. And so he used to come out every year and do that. And I was like, yeah, I used to do this Nike thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned him. And he's like, Scott's on my team.
Hmm.
And I was like, awesome. And he's like, so if I call Scott right now.
He'll know.
He's like, what is Scott going to say about you?
Hmm.
I said, Scott's going to say I'm phenomenal. And so he's like, okay, hold on. So he calls on the video call. And Scott's like, yeah, I work with Tiffany. She was great, whatever, blah, blah. And he was like, and I got hired basically like there. So they had said like, we never hired anybody via Skype interview. I got my like first apartment off of Craigslist and I was making $50,000 and I was like popping to all my, you know, I was like,
Chicago.
This is crazy. I got the job on my mom's birthday. And yeah, I was like, you know, I took a chance on myself. And I think it was scary to do that. And it was like, okay. But again, I felt like I know my worth. Mm-hmm. I know what I bring to the table. I know that it's going to happen if it's supposed to be a part of my story. It's just like, but it can't happen in this matter. Right?
Right.
It was like, I don't even see my story of me having to like, it's like a girl that's like, I'm not proposing to my man. You know, it's like, no, we're not writing that story.
I'll wait until you're ready.
I'll make it so that you, when you get down, you're going to get down on both knees. But we're not doing that. So that's kind of like how I approach things.
When we come back in just a moment, Tiffany makes it to Nike and is living her dream. But dreams can always change. Hey, everyone. The Claim a Stories podcast is supported by Converse. If you're a fan of Chuck 70s like we are, be sure to visit converse.com and pick up a new pair. Also, we wanted to share a little behind the scenes with you about the recording of the show. Each week, we produce new episodes from our new studio in Portland, Oregon. As we've grown, we wanted a space inspired by our love of mid-century modern design. We were able to achieve this with the help of our friends at The Good Mod and PDX Original. Hey, it's Bima. Welcome back to Claim a Stories. It's 2014, and Tiffany is living in Portland, Oregon, and working at Nike WHQ as an associate product line manager.
So when I started out, I was not a famous PLM. I was an APLM.
Okay.
And that's a big deal because
So what's the A?
It's an associate So essentially it's like you're on the product team, but like nobody asks you anything. You don't do anything except for like sort samples and do stuff like that. So that's what I moved out for. And I was doing that in tennis. Okay. So I was working on like Serena Williams apparel and Rafa Nadal. And it was really cool to go back to do stuff like for the US Open, mm-hmm. you know, in my backyard. But the day-to-day for that specific job was literally like, I was in apparel too. It was like putting together samples, steaming stuff. And then I owned like a very specific or small part of the business, which was like t-shirts and hats. And it was like, you own that and you own the lifestyle stuff. So mm-hmm. trying to make tennis cool again, right? That was the reason I think that they brought me in was like, she has this experience. She doesn't necessarily have product experience, but we're trying to, you know, evolve tennis from this only performance sport to mm-hmm. being back what it used to be when Agassi was playing and it was like a really cool thing.
Like this fever pitch moment.
Yeah. Right. So that was really, that was cool because I just kind of got to, I had no responsibilities, but I got to like win. You know mm-hmm, what I mean? It's like I got to present these really cool ideas and connect to different types of tennis players and stuff. And then from there, I got promoted and I moved on to footwear as a PLM.
Okay.
So then that was the coveted. Like I think there's
so
like
this is like these are this is the roles that you hear about where people are like you worked on that Nike sneaker, you worked on those sneakers.
Yeah. There's like I think there's maybe like 50, maybe less PLMs at Nike that work in footwear. It's like, it might be tighter than that. So it's a very coveted job that you, once you're in product, you stay in product and it's very hard for people to get in. And another story is I went from the APLM in apparel to a footwear PLM and the person I spoke to, they were like, you can't do that jump. You got to go APLM. If you're in apparel, then you need to move over to an APLM in footwear. And I was like, no, I'm going to go to a PLM in footwear.
I'm going to get my promotion.
And you can get a new job in a year. So at 8 months, I started being like, all right, I'm trying to get a new job. Mm-hmm. And I got my job at a year and got promoted. And people were like, I remember people being like, who's this girl coming into footwear? It was a whole thing. Like, what experience does she have?
Yeah.
And I worked on Solar and ACG. So boots and, you know, I had like what people call like the infamous fanny pack, Benassi slide. That was like a big deal.
Oh, I remember those. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So like, it was really fun because it was like, there was no pressure again because it was a very seasonal business, but it was a massive business. Like Nike sells behind the Monarch, shout out to Jay May. The Benassi is like the highest selling footwear item because it's a slide. It's a great price point. And everybody has a Nike slide, right? Yeah. We have multiple of them, your kids have them or whatever. So it was like, I got to work on a really good, big business and understand business expertise. So my job was really just, hey, how do we connect with consumers? Mm-hmm. How do we brief product in to our designers and our development team? Yeah. So really looking at the scope of what I like to think about, it was, if I'm looking at this business, are there any gaps in this business that we can potentially increase the revenue on and their business opportunities, right? So it's just like, again, it goes back to sports. It's like, I already know how these players play. Right. I have it all in front of me. Hey, is there any way we can get through this defense? Yep. Or we can kind of, you know, how we win this game.
Strategize, figure out how we can point out a weakness and see an opportunity for ourselves.
Yeah, that nobody else is looking for. Right. And of course, my creativity. I'm like, and how can I do it in a really cool way? Yeah. So that's where like some of the craziest, I remember Drake wore like one of the boots on tour and it just like completely blew up and it was like we need to make more of these boots, these Drake boots. Jeez. Like it was a whole thing. So it was a cool experience to do that. And then essentially they moved me over during the one of the reorgs and I got promoted to be on the women's statement footwear team for sportswear. So that was like what I would have considered my dream job.
Your
at
dream
Nike
job.
I'm working on the footwear for the 13-year-old basically version of myself, right? Mm-hmm. The girl that used to go into the sneaker store.
Right.
I'm now creating those stories on Air Force Ones and Blazers and Cortez. Like I was in charge of all of Heritage.
Wow.
Shocks, you know, anything from DNA. So like my job was literally going to DNA with my designers and my developers, figure out cool stories we wanted to retell and bring back these shoes to serve like the crazy sneakerheads, right?
Talk like about a dream. Like if you love sneakers, like you're in the role that everybody's like, how can I be a part of this?
It was so cool. Like my favorite project was working on the Aqua, the Rift. We made like a version of it called the Aqua Rift. One of my favorite shoes. And Cortez is my favorite shoe also. But like that was super cool to be like looking at Aqua gear and all this like cool stuff that I'm like, oh my God, like Nike was the, this is what I remember growing up. And now I'm getting to like bring those stories out specifically for women.
Mm-hmm.
So that was even cooler to be like you know, those feeds, like those hypebeasts, and like, why did they make this for women? Men get nothing. And I'm like, I did my job.
Like, y'all been having stuff for years. I've been waiting to get some stuff that's not pink and shrink.
Exactly.
Right? So why this is happening, essentially, you know, you kind of mentioned, like, this feels like your dream career. And ultimately, it was an opportunity for you also purchase your own home, your first home. Mm-hmm. And a new interest starts to percolate.
Yeah. So I buy my first home. And I had the goal that, like, I'm going to buy it before 30. Mm-hmm. And I just had this, like, notion of, like, what is the Jay-Z song? Like, 30-something, 30's the new 20, right? Yeah, I was like, okay, I got to do it before Jay-Z starts rapping about me and I'm old, you know? So I buy my first house. And, of course, I just, like, it wasn't even decorating. I'm just like, I'm just going to make my house feel like the way I need it to feel. I always did that. Apartments or dorm rooms or, like, when we lived in, the projects or whatever, mm-hmm. it's like, I always tried to make sure my space felt as comfortable as I needed it to feel because I can easily be at home all day. And I knew I knew how that made me feel. It was like that level of peace and sanity and tranquility. So I buy my first house. And again, I'm doing this dream job. And that's when things start getting complicated.
It's what, like, do you mean? What's going on?
It's like, on the surface, it's like going, it's like not being happy, but you go back home. And everybody back home is like, she works for Nike and she gets to make, she made those sneakers. And you can see people sending you shoes, but you're just like, I don't even care.
Mm-hmm.
All I care about is going back home to my house and just making my house feel
good.
Like, if I could not leave my house and not go to work, I would happily not do that. So it just started to become this, like, again, is like started to just change where I just was kind of over it. I was like, this is cool and it's great. And there's still these amazing milestones that I'm trying to hit, but I don't feel like I thought it was going to feel.
It's not the same passion. Your passion is shifting. Like, you see it going from, okay, I'm doing all the sneaker stuff and all the stuff I was growing up loving. But this other thing, I got this house and I'm like, I can't stop thinking about decorating.
Yeah. And I can't stop thinking about, like, can I decorate for others? You know, can I make this what I feel, other people feel? Mm-hmm. And, this sneaker thing was just at some point I stopped talking about Nike. I stopped telling people I worked at Nike.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, if you know, you know, right?
Yeah.
So my mom would ask me, like, hey, how's work? And I just like, oh, I don't want to talk about it. Let me tell you about these stairs that I have in my house. You know, it was like, there was so many politics and it was a great experience, but it just became overwhelming. And I didn't feel like what I thought my, actually, I'll say this. It's like meeting your favorite celebrity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have this vision for what meeting Rihanna is going to be like. And she's going to ask me to work for her. And it's going to be this stuff. And we're just going to be best friends. And let's say I meet her and it's not that experience. It's kind of like, well, damn, now what?
Now,
you know,
what?
It's like, it's the dog that chases the car. And then once they get the car, it's like, well, what does the dog do now? He just goes back home? Like, does he keep running? Or what? So it just felt like that. It felt like I got to this place that I had set my heart on and everything was centered around, like, I'm going to sacrifice these family moments and, like, seeing the people I love and traveling just for this place. And then I got there and I was like, damn, this ain't it.
This ain't it.
But what is it is this place that Nike has allowed me to get to. So it's like, again, I use so many analogies, but it's walking in a room and it's like you with your boyfriend, but then you meet your fiance. Like, okay, you know,
okay, I'm good. It's time.
I didn't know, you know, I thought I was here with this person, but this just—it's a whole different game now. So that's kind of what happened.
And so when you're at home and thinking about what you're designing in your home to make you feel comfortable, what were the things that you were really getting excited about in that space?
I mean, I still get excited about, like, couches and textures and my bed and, like, you know, really thinking about, I was like more so like, okay, this is my first place, but, like, in Portland where you can, but you kind of get over the scene of, like, I'm not trying to go out. Mm-hmm. You know, we would have game nights with all of our friends and get super rowdy.
Yeah.
One of my really good friends had just moved away where his house was the spot for game night. So I was like, this is going to be the game night
this
spot.
This is game night spot now.
So for me, all I was thinking was, like, how do I design my place to be the game night spot?
Where everybody's like, we got to go to Tiffany's.
We got to go to Tiffany's. Is my couch long and comfy enough? Is my dining room table seat enough people that if I want to host Friendsgiving, I can do so? But then my upstairs space was like, that needs to just be my retreat, right?
Yeah.
So, like, my bedroom has to feel like you know, my place of calm from all this craziness. And especially thinking about game nights too, there's sometimes where I'd be like, y'all just have a good time. I'm going to go upstairs.
I'm going to go chill.
So it just needed to be like a little bit of a different feeling than how downstairs felt. But I'll also say this, like it didn't all come together as, like I look back at photos, I'm like, oh, you thought that was good design. Like that was not like.
Learning and growing.
Yeah, like the proportions were right. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some things that you try to work in, but it's like my aesthetic evolved as I knew more about design, as I became more comfortable myself and really started to have the funds to be able to get the stuff that I really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started to come into my own. It was like, wow, now my house is a represent, like it represents what I really wanted it to feel like. Mm-hmm. Before I knew it and I felt it, but I don't know that everybody felt it.
Yeah. And so at what point, you know, you're on this journey and a couple years go by and you're continuing to grow as an interior designer. At what point did you really start to feel that validation that you had the talent to maybe do this even more, or maybe even have a client or have clients?
So for me, it was so easy to, it's easy to do stuff for yourself. You know what you like, you know what you have your budget for, you can do it on your timeline. It's like, that's easy breezy. Of course, you can make your own space for the most part feel good.
Right.
It was doing it for others. So I remember part of my little finesse when I was working in women's was like, okay, well, how do I talk to the VP and get this space redesigned, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, can they give me some money? Can I just figure out? Because I was like, this place is awful. I can't come in here every day knowing what my house looks like. And this is not a working environment where everybody, it's just like, it was so, again, disappointing being in Nike and being like, damn, these buildings suck. The inside, like, and the new buildings are phenomenal.
Yeah.
They are so well designed and they've been so smart about it. But the old ones were just so outdated that I'm like, I don't imagine how do you guys spend 8 hours here and we're creating the most amazing product, but this space doesn't reflect that. So I started like, I did a little bit for like our area. And then one of the VPs who I, you know, highly respect, that's like super on top right now. His name is Charles. He came over. He was like, hey, I want you to redo my office. He's like,
oh, wow.
He was like, listen, it's getting dark out at 4 o'clock. You know, he had just like, he was already like really high up, but I think he had just gotten his like first huge bump as like the VP of men's sportswear or something. And he was like, you know, it's summertime, it's about to fade. He's like, I got to be in this office.
I need
help. Mm-hmm. He's like, because I can't do it. So I was like, sure, I'll help you.
Yeah.
And he's like, and I'll pay you.
Wow.
And I remember talking to my boyfriend. He was like, you better take that job. I was like, I was so excited. I was like, he's going to pay me. And he's like, I was like, what do I charge him? Whatever. And I think I charged him like $2,000. And he told my boyfriend, he's like, she should have charged me way more. But he's like, but I'll take the deal.
He's
from Chicago. So you know how they do. Yeah. They're like, I'll take the deal. And I did his office like on the weekends. And I didn't tell anybody I was doing his office.
Mm-hmm.
So then people would, all of a sudden he comes in. He's like, wow, this is insane. And like, I love being here. He's bringing in Mark Parkers and whoever he's meeting.
Showing it off.
Yeah. And people are like, who did your office? He's like, Tiffany did it. They're like, well, when did Tiffany? And I'm like, on Saturday and Sunday, I came in here and was Bob the Builder and just figured stuff out. And that was like my first like, damn, you can do this for others. Because again, I respected him so much as a mentor and just his vision for things that I was like, if he can believe in me and pay me, it's different when your friends do it. Like my friends are amazing and some of them are assholes and some of them are really validating and they have to humble me when they need to humble me. But somebody that's completely doesn't owe me anything outside of my day job and even gives more there. I was like, if he sees this as just my side hustle, then I can do this.
You can really do this.
And that's when I just started being like, all right, well, now I have the like, this is the standard for what I charge. Mm-hmm. And now let's try to get 2,500 and let's try to get 3,000 and let's try, you know, just build your way up from there.
So. Right. So the takeaway, I guess, from working on the project with Charles was that it gave you, I mean, you already had the confidence, but it kind of gave you the go-ahead to like pursue this thing with validation that people like your work.
Yeah. And he knew what he was doing. He definitely, I think, saw more for like, this is the thing. Cause I would come in there too and be like, you a boss, you got this off. This office is horrible. Like, I was also very like, I'm such a New York girl sometimes. And I would be like, this ain't it.
This
like,
ain't
you,
it.
You know, you too much for this office. This office ain't it. And so, you know, thankfully he just didn't. He understood that was a lot.
Yeah.
But I think he believed in me as well and was like, I'm going to give her this opportunity. So I'm like, if he likes it, then I know I'm good. You know, it's like, I'm good. I don't have to worry about this. Like, I'll figure out how to, like, and again, the whole, like, running a business and all that stuff, like, I'll figure that stuff out later. Mm-hmm. But at least I know that I cannot do this with others. And again, sometimes you're really good at your talent, but some people are not meant to serve others in whatever their talent is, or like the level of creativity. Some people need to be isolated and just work by themselves and then hand off their, you know, whatever that end result is to people. It is a completely different skill set to be able to talk to somebody. What I like to joke around about with my quote is, Robin is only good until you know Batman exists. Right? So it's like, again, another analogy. You walk in a room, you know, a dating analogy, and you're dating this guy, and he's Robin. He got his little suit on, and he's got his little car and his little mask. And he's like, oh, this is Robin. He's like, I'm a superhero. He's like, you a superhero? This is crazy. And then after a couple months, this guy walks in. Who the hell is that? Oh, that's Batman. I should have waited for Batman, you know? So it's like, I think, again, some people, it's like working with other people is taking their ideas, which is Robin sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's what they can envision. They obviously are coming to you for help. And then I'm turning it into Batman. I'm giving them more than, you know, what they ever dreamt of. And it's like going to a restaurant. If you went to a restaurant and you're just like, I want this. And they just, I want chicken and rice. And they just give you some dry chicken and rice. You'd be like, no, what I mean, I want you to put your little sauce on it and give me something.
Give me something.
Yeah. So that's what I think. Working with other people is hard. And that's a big part of, like, that's probably the most important part about running a business and designing. It's not always the end result. It's how people feel and how you make them feel content. And, you know, you're kind of like, it's a really sensitive topic to go into somebody's house.
And you're, it's a very vulnerable place.
Yeah, you're getting undressed with somebody. Yeah. Like, you're getting naked and I'm telling you what's good and what's not good about your body. Yeah. And then I'm going to fix it. Like, that's a very vulnerable place. So that's a really, once I figured out that I could do that, I was like, yeah, this has got to be what I'm here for. And going back to being, you know, like my upbringing and, you know, not having parents and all this stuff and how I was taken in, I just realized, like, home meant so much to me. Yeah. And it was so much more than just like an aesthetic. It was literally this emotive feeling. It's like, I'm selling feelings. Right. And I need everybody to feel that sense of peace and calm that I felt when my mom took me in, you know? And it's like, you guys don't even understand what that does for your confidence and what that can do for everything that you do. Mm-hmm. Just making sure your space feels complete, you know?
Wow. And so in 2018, right? So this is after these things are happening. You're doing well from your new interest standpoint and your new business standpoint. But things took a turn and you were no longer employed at Nike.
I got fired, y'all. I got fired.
What happened?
We won't go into the story, but I made a very rash decision and Nike decided to make a decision based on that. And a very early decision based on that. And they kicked me out the party, right? So we talk about this. I got kicked out the party. What my boyfriend says is I don't have to tell people that I got kicked out. I can just say I left. So I left the party. The party wasn't popping no more. Mm-hmm. And we landed in, okay, now what are we going to do?
Now what are we going to do? So essentially, how did you take it? Did you take it as more of a like, this is my moment to like actually step into the path that I'm ready and I've been putting energy into, or, you know, were you having feelings towards it? Where were you at?
I cried. The first, I mean, there's nothing wrong with shedding a little a tear. I cried. I remember when they were telling me and I was like, what? Like, I did all of this for almost 10 years for this company. I was one of 3 or 4 Black women in my position ever. And I was just like, I was in shock because I just didn't think that that was going to be, I was like, I'm going to leave. I was at 9.5 years. I was going to leave at 10. So I was like, I only had literally like a couple months left.
Just a little bit left.
Just a little left. And then I was like, y'all done kicked me out the damn party. I was going to shut this party down and leave, you know? So it was really like, I was crying because I was in shock. Like, I can't believe this happened. But the first thing, again, shout out to like the people that are support systems, my mom and like my boyfriend, my partner, and my friends. First thing, he was like, you need to get your ass up. Because what we're not going to do is feel sorry for yourself. And my mom has this 24-hour rule. You have 24 hours to celebrate. You got 24 hours to soak in your, you know, in whatever you're going through. Mm-hmm. But you only get 24 hours. We don't prolong this. So get it out and keep it pushing.
Oh, wow.
So I cried for my 24 hours, like literally on my 24th hour. And then I had to have a conversation with God. And I was like, listen, a lot of people, I think when they have these adverse moments, the easiest question is why? Why did this happen? Why me?
Yeah.
I was like, remember talking to him and I was like, I'm not going to say why. I don't need to know why.
Yeah.
All I need to know, and I do know, is that whatever your plan for me is, what I'm telling you now, this is literally the conversation I had, I'm ready to go on whatever that journey is.
Yeah.
So whatever you got in store for me, I know that this all happened for a reason. I said that, you know, again, the situation I went through, I was like, I forgive the people that made those decisions and that put me in this situation. I forgive myself for making that decision. Mm-hmm. But I was like, it's go time.
It's
so
go time.
What are we doing?
And so you're all right. So you moved on. You
24 hours,
you know, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, you're like, OK, the New Yorker in me is what's next.
Yeah.
So
because you don't get to write my story. You know, you don't get to like. Again, all the stuff that I've gone through so early on my career, it's like, yeah, I don't get to tell me this is how my book ends. Like, no, this is just this is another climax in the movie. But what happens from here, now I control and God's going to be along with this journey. And it's just, again, I was trying to hit this arbitrary number of 10 because yeah. I just thought that was the, oh yeah, I worked at Nike for 10 years and I just need to hit that. And then I'm going to have this huge send off and maybe they'll give me some season tickets or something because I'm so popping. But it was like, that just wasn't my story and that wasn't my vision. And yeah. That was totally fine.
Yeah, that's totally fine. And so, but after this happens, an opportunity came your way though.
Yeah.
Right? Like you got a phone call from like an NBA player or something.
Yeah. So I call like a couple of my friends and I'm like, I'm not crying, but I'm crying when I'm talking about it. So I feel like that's like a kind of questionable 24 hours.
Yeah.
Like I'm strong on the phone. Like, yeah. So, you know, I got kicked out of the party. And I'm like, but, you know, I don't know why this happened, but I'm okay.
I'm all right. I'm good.
So I called, I text my friend, the NBA player, but I called his wife. And me and her have such an amazing relationship. She's been, honestly, I owe them so much. But I called her and I told her what happened. And she had been joking around on Instagram, like every time I posted like a room, she's like, girl, you need to do our house. When we get our house, you need to do our house.
Oh, wow.
So she had been joking around and like adding him and stuff. And he'd be like, yeah, 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 whatever. And then she called me. She was like, hey, okay, so I know this happened. She's like, we just bought a place. Would love for you to do it. And I was like, okay, like, this is my moment.
This is my moment.
It's doing, like, again, he's one of the best in the league. And she's been so supportive. And I was like, this is the moment. I'm scared to death because I'm like, when these are my friends, so I can't fuck this up. And both of them are very like, they know what they want.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is scary. I've never even really done a big house like this before. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like.
So you bit off a lot.
Yeah, I'm kind of like my way through it a little bit, which I definitely learned through that experience. But yeah, it just was like, it was really cool that was almost not even a week, I think, after was like, I'm flying now to San Francisco and working on this house. And that was, again, that was godsend. I couldn't have, like I said, whatever the journey was. And I know that I wouldn't have been able to do that had I been at Nike.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm like, everything happened the way it needed to happen because I didn't have the capacity.
Right.
And I think she and him wouldn't even have asked me because they're like, you can't fly out here every week.
Right. Had you been in your other situation. But it is funny you mention it. It's a lot of times that a lot of doors don't open up in your life until people know how committed you are. Right. Because they will make the assumption, even if you're like, no, I'll make it happen. Their assumption is just that, well, you got a whole other job. How are you going to do this?
Yeah. I remember there was, I watched Shark Tank a lot. I love Shark Tank and I hope to one day get on that show. Kevin, if you're listening, please put me on the show. But I remember watching Shark Tank and it was Mark, he's like Mark Cuban.
Okay.
And he was one of the, you know, the four guys, whatever. And this lady or this guy, I don't remember the exact details, but they were talking about this business that they had. And, you know, he was interested. They were all interested. And a couple of the other sharks had like, oh yeah, we're good. We don't want to, whatever the details were. And he had said to her, he said, he was like, so what do you do? Like, is this your full-time job? Like, are you invested in this? And she was like, no, well, I actually have another job. This is my like side. I do this on the weekends. And he's like, well, I'm out. And she said, why? He said, well, how do you expect me to commit to something and put my money, my time, my energy into something that you don't even have the faith and the ability to believe in yourself. He was like, so you call me when you're full-time in it and we can revisit this conversation. And I remember that always stuck to me, like, yeah, you can't reach your full capacity when you give something 50%, no matter how much you're like, I'm putting this in on the side and I'm doing this. It's like, you're going to come across these roadblocks or just opportunities that are just not going to reach you because of other people's perceptions. But it's just your energy that you're not fully committed in it. So you got to take, it's scary, but you got to take that, like, that step and take that leap of faith, because then all of those things happen.
Right. Yeah. Totally. Totally. So you make this step. There's another big validation point in that you're working with an MBA client and their wife, and things are going really well. And you're learning.
And I will say too, like, working with your friends is not bad. Like, I think there is this stigma of, like, you can't work with your friends. Like, working with your friends is actually really cool because, one, they have, I mean, again, they had so much grace with me to be like patient with my, like, emotional self or whatever. Of, like, I don't know how to do this, but I'm, like, trying to figure it out. But it was really, just like I said, it was a cool experience. And I just think it's like, it's not bad. You know, it's like there's a bad connotation on that. And it's, again, it's like your friends sometimes have these opportunities and they can see, and it's like, hey, let me, again, he's a super vocal player and like he has put me in so many positions to be able to win post that. So I'm always grateful.
That's amazing.
Maybe I'll name like my first child after like, maybe not my first child, but a middle name or something after one of them. Yeah.
Maybe I'll get an acronym.
Yeah, we'll get a letter. We'll name it after the same letter.
My goodness. So, you know, you've since worked with other NBA players such as D'Angelo Russell. You've been featured in Architectural Digest. You are collaborating with Soho House, and you also have your own brand, right? Tell me a little bit about your brand and what you're doing from that perspective.
So the way I kind of divided it up in my head, at least, is like, thinking about like, okay, so there's Nike Inc., right? But there's Jordan and Converse underneath it. I'm like, okay, Duet Interiors is my brand and it's my baby. And Duet also, because we didn't actually explain this, but Duet is essentially what the word Duet means. When I was looking for names, I was trying to think of like, I wanted something deeper and I wanted something that was easy that people already say. And when I looked up the word Duet, it was a merger of, it was harmonizing, but two people or two instruments coming together and harmonizing to create something beautiful.
Oh, wow.
So then I was like, oh, that's super cool. Like, that's what I want to do with my clients. I'm going to work with them in partnership, give, you know, the Robin to the Batman and give them something that they, you know, never envisioned. And so we're going to harmonize and work with one another. And I just added on another T because of my initials. So Duet Interiors is like the head of it. And then I think within that, there's pillars of like, okay, there's Tiffany, Plant Mommy, like as a businesswoman and like as a kind of as talent.
As a thought leader in the space, an expert.
And so like, what does Tiffany want to put out in the world? And that could be finances and that's, you know, design and all this stuff. And then there's also just like actual interior design. So me working on houses, you know, I definitely want to continue to specialize in like residential. Because I think when I think about memories and I think about, you think about all the photos that you have from like back in the day that you remember the smell of things, but you also remember like the couch you were on and all this stuff. So there's that scope of it. And then there's also like the product scope. And again, another one of Diddy's quotes is like, you can't be famous or you can't be rich, excuse me, without having product, right? So you got to sell something. There has to be some kind of like income that just comes in.
There's got to be some sort of transaction.
Yeah. And I think also thinking about it, like, yeah, I may be someone that like people, everybody can't afford at some point, right? And everybody doesn't have the ability to hire an interior designer regardless of what your price point is. But just being able to give them a piece of me. So it's like, I always joke around this, like the Black Martha Stewart. But, you know, it's like everybody can't hire Martha Stewart, but you could go to this store and get all the Martha Stewart goodies and all that stuff. And it makes you feel like you have a part of her in your house. So that's what we want to continue to do from a product standpoint is like, I only have one product right now, which is a plastic covered pillow inspired by my grandma's couch.
Yes, love those.
And again, that's just like more of a nostalgic thing for me and for, you know, all the 90s and 80s babies out there that remember that feeling and doing it in a more, you know, kind of luxe way. But, you know, the plan is to have linens and to have, you know, anything you can think of to dress your home and an extension of what I do for my clients on a high level that would come in the product side.
That's amazing. You have a lot of opportunity in front of you, right? Like, it's just, it's really cool to hear you thinking through already the different tiers of which you want to approach your business. And a lot of times when I think, some of that inspired me of how I think about things too. And I credit some of it to working as a product line manager, because it makes you think through like product cycle and longevity and how do you stay fresh with people that are interested in what you do.
Yeah, I think it's so easy for us to, for people, and especially people's just, it's already hard to start a business. Mm-hmm. It's already hard to put yourself out there and to put your work out there with such a critical internet and social media kind of world right now.
Right.
But part of that is also, again, having the vision to think long-term and not think now. Mm. So there's this, so it's like, I love Curb Your Enthusiasm, but there's literally a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where like Susie has this business and she has a horrible name for it. And Larry's like, what the F is this name, you know? And it's like, I should just work on renaming businesses. And that is such a thing, is like, when you think about not what you're putting out there from a, like what your service is, but when you think about your businesses and the names and the script and the logos, like you have to think long-term. If you're McDonald's, what does that look like? Even in the starting phases, because my goal is, you know, to get to these places, even if I'm not there yet, mm-hmm. but I got to think about the vision. Like
right now.
Yeah. Like, what does your logo look like on the front of a storefront if you want to open a store? Is it legible? Like, if you're driving by and you're lost because your phone is dead.
Right.
Can I see Duet Designs?
Right.
You know, it's just like, you have to think about these things. And again, don't think about the now. You always want to think about the future. And then you're working your way towards making your future happen. And that's also, like you said, the law of attraction.
Gosh, that's so amazing. So amazing. One of the last questions I have for you is, as you think over your career so far, because you have so far to go, but you've accomplished so much already. When you think about young creatives, we call them storytellers. What advice would you have for them when it comes to their entrepreneurial ideas?
That's such a good question. I think this is also an answer for myself, right? Because again, like you said, I am in such the beginning phases. I just think you have to really believe in yourself without a doubt, without a shadow of doubt, that you are capable of, one, the opportunities that come to you, the vision that you have in store for yourself. And I really like the quote of like, just because other people don't see your vision doesn't mean that vision's not supposed to happen for you. Doesn't mean that that's not going to come true. And I think you just gotta stay put, right? So put your head down, work hard, be nice to people, treat other people with respect, and, you know, put your all into it. And I think if you do that, regardless of the outcome, you're always going to at least feel content. Mm. And then the last thing is really just do what you love. I cannot stress that enough. I'm so, like, again, growing up in New York and being so independent, where my mom was so busy that she didn't care what the hell I did as long as I wasn't doing anything illegal. It's just like really thinking about like, what is the, on a Sunday afternoon when I'm in Minnesota, or Thanksgiving when I was in Minnesota by myself working on this home in the hotel room with my bottle of wine, I was like, I fucking love what I do. Like, there was never a moment where I was like, damn, this sucks. I can't believe I'm away from my family, my friends, coronavirus, and I'm here. I was like, I'm just so blessed to do what I love, and I wouldn't change my story. I wouldn't change my experiences for absolutely anything. So don't feel pressure to do something because, again, it's somebody else is telling you to do it. It's like, just put your head down and just keep going towards what you feel is right. And, you know, trust your feelings and your emotions.
That was Tiffany Thompson, an interior designer whose hustle has taken her from sports to having a home court advantage in the design world. Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. Find out more about Tiffany and get access to all of our episodes at Apple Podcasts. Our show this week is produced by BJ Fregoso, original music, production, and scoring by Adrian Anaya, original music by Danny Castillo, Kinsley Barry-Quattro, Orlando Kennedy, and vocals provided by Rosella. And special thanks also to VDOT, Professor H, Jordan Dinwiddie, Nick Pop, and Lily Lynn. I'm Bima, and you've been listening to Claima Stories.